fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland. It's the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated, and everybody got a part-time job from the government as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guests are Bernie Mendez and Andrew Bosaggio. Bosaggio. Now let's see if I can think, because Bosaggio, when I think about the name, I kind of think about like a lone shark, a lone Bosaggio, you know,
because when I think of it, I think of a future American president. So maybe it's appropriate. Hey, we're on two different sides of the world.
Hey, and look at it this way. There's not a terribly large amount of difference between a loan shark and a president of the United States, is there? Fundamentally. speaking of breaking down to the fundamentals. Now, Andrew, I've heard a lot of talk about this incident with Alfred Weber at the just recently, bringing up your information at a 9/11 conference, something about a being chased with Barack Obama by some kind of dinosaur on Mars. I don't know what the full story is or what Alfred was talking about. I haven't had a chance to go into it. So if you'd actually be able to elaborate and actually tell that story here to the audience, maybe they'll give them some background as well.
The air deserves to be cleared on that most important topic of 9/11. When I was a child in Project Pegasus, my father and I were called on an emergency basis to the laboratory maintained by the Aerojet Corporation on the New Mexico Institute of Science and Technology campus at the corner of Bullock Avenue and Leroy Place in Socorro. This was in 1971. And it was in that laboratory in which photo analysts working for Project Pegasus were photo analyzing not chronovision images, not, in other words, not holographic images of the future, but information that had been physically ferried back to the present on microfilm, containing essentially a 70-year history of the future. Basically, there was a microfilm summaries of future events from the perspective of the early 70s, reaching to the year in which they were retrieved from the future and brought back, and that year was 2045. In fact, I participated in several of those probes to retrieve those canisters of microfilm from a Stargate device that was huge. It was a huge gate that was set up on the Olympic-sized basketball court at a WPA-constructed community center that's still standing in Cerrillos, New Mexico. If any of your guests visit Santa Fe, New Mexico, and they're driving around to the smaller communities, it's really immediately southeast of Santa Fe, these buildings. So we had been jumping forward in time, retrieving those canisters, jumping back from a teleport that was in the building there, and then popping back into view around the microwave tower at the Lobo Overlook Point, due west, 3 miles west of the Continental Divide sign on Highway 160 in southwest Colorado. And from there, we would surrender the microfilm canisters and then be bussed back to New Mexico. Now, when my father and I were called down to the location where that film was being analyzed, we were greeted in the hallway after my dad presented his Department of Defense credentials, and we were cleared by the guard with a gun sitting at the counter there at this C-shaped building there in Socorro, New Mexico. And it was an Aerojet Corporation facility. It had an Aerojet sign literally on the front grass. And in fact, I interviewed people working at the research library at New Mexico Tech who remembered that building and confirmed for me that it was there in the early 70s. And we were greeted in the hallway by a technician who said to my father in a very excited tone of voice, Ray, we've got it. We've got pictures of the event. We've got pictures of the domestic Pearl Harbor. So we were taken into a room there with about 20 different television monitors. And this individual took a Betamax-styled videotape upon which had been deposited some of the microfilm images 10 years before Betamax tapes entered the commercial market, certainly. And what we witnessed was about a 20-second film loop of one of the planes hitting one of the Twin Towers on September 11th of 2001, 30 years in the future. Now, I also remember times when the 9/11 event, as domestic Pearl Harbor-like event, within the continental United States, literally an attack on U.S. soil that such as had not been seen since the War of 1812, when, of course, the British troops burned down the White House. So this is a very significant event among the future events that they were gathering information about, because it was an attack, at least a terrorist attack, if not a military attack, on the U.S. homeland. And there were times when my father, as one of the highly placed engineers in the project, who was reading the reports, the internal reports in which they were summarizing what they knew of future conditions and events, he was sometimes asked what he knew about this event that people were talking about in the program called 9-1-1. And he was describing the conventional view of the event. So in furtherance of my duty to uphold the U.S. Constitution and my oath of truthfulness as a leader of the truth movement, and as somebody who simply was a material witness to prior knowledge by the U.S. government of the events of 9-11, indeed in a context in which the man who was defense secretary on 9-11, Donald Rumsfeld, was serving as defense attaché to the very project I was on that had retrieved this data from the future, proof or evidence of a 9-11-linked terrorist attack, or at least plane attack on the Twin Towers. I wrote a very factual, very concise, single-space, 10-page affidavit that I submitted to the Vancouver 9/11 Tribunal. The result was that three principal figures in the 9/11 movement, namely Professor James Fetzer, researcher Kevin Barrett, and Barbara Honegger, used the unusual nature of my claims in that affidavit to begin basically attacking me as a witness and commenting about my testimony, which violates the canons of being a witness. You're not supposed to talk about other, you're not even supposed to know about other people. But they became aware of what I was claiming in my affidavit, began attacking me, began attacking the judge, which also violates the canons of legal ethics. And without even knowing that my story is true, and the fact that Donald Rumsfeld was the defense attaché on a project that had moving pictures of the 9/11 attacks 30 years before they happened, they made this peremptory judgment that I must be a liar or some kind of intelligence agent trying to disrupt the 9/11 truth movement, when in fact I was a critical witness to it, and they most of them withdrew from the Vancouver 9/11 tribunal. Several of them, Fetzer and Barrett, went on to write these poison pen articles about me that totally distort my work, that distort my true experiences as a child participant in Project Pegasus, and as one of the chrononauts in the Jump Room program 10 years later, who has had the courage not only to participate in these projects in which new dangerous and experimental technology has been developed, but who had the political courage to step forward in my country and what the U.S. government has done with their tax dollars, namely achieve time travel, and then 10 years later, use it to get to Mars. But along the way, as a child who sat in many project meetings, many strategy sessions, and also lunches and dinners and cocktail parties with people like Manhattan Project scientists like Agnew and Teller and Segre, some of the federal science administrators like Dr. Agnew again, or Stephen J. Lukasik when he was director of DARPA, or Ivan Browning when he was director of science and technology for CIA, individuals like Mr. Rumsfeld, who was the defense attaché to the project. I mean, I was witness to history. I was witness to advanced professionals in the defense technical community developing time travel and using it to find things out about the future. Well, along the way, they uncovered visual evidence of the 9/11 attacks. Now, Alfred, as a judge, believes that that helps establish the mens rea, the legally culpable mental state, for Secretary Rumsfeld's duplicity in the 9/11 events. I don't believe that's the case. What the evidence shows is prior knowledge. And in an era of quantum access, where previously prior knowledge implied, created a rebuttable presumption that one was either a conspirator or an accomplice after the fact, that one had aided and abetted if one knew about a future criminal act. After the advent of quantum access, that's no longer true. All knowledge may mean is simply knowledge. One can be a government bureaucrat or technician and have evidence of a future event and have no mens rea to commit the event, not even to know about it in the conventional way. So what happened was I wrote a completely truthful affidavit about what Project Pegasus knew about this future domestic Pearl Harbor event called 9/11. I was diligent, spent a week of my own time, taking time out from my law practice. I'm a lawyer in solo private practice. I support myself. I have for 16 years without a single complaint being filed by one of my clients, much less any kind of ethical allegation against me. And I took a week out to write a hard-boiled 10-page analysis of exactly what they need to know about Project Pegasus and what that project...
Oh, hold on, Andrew. Bernie's shuffling around back there. He's kind of bleated you out there for a second. Bernie, you wanted to jump in here for a second, didn't you?
Yes. What Andrew's talking about is what we got from the Crown Advisors. We had some intelligence about this 9/11 event very early on, but we didn't know what it meant. There were different views of the whole subject. When we viewed it, it was viewed by a lot of people, and I did some reconnaissance myself at that particular jump. It was like the Lincoln jump, the Forbes Theater. It was a reasonable facsimile of Forbes Theater, because I had gone to the original Forbes Theater, measured it all out with a slide rule, with tape measures. And then when I made the jump, I measured it all out again, and it wasn't the same measurements. There were things that were missing. There were other things that were like had canvas curtains between the little booths. And the back hall was a little different. The stage was a little different. There were things missing, like the floodlights, which were gas lights, and the fire brigade, and the water buckets, or the sand buckets. And the rows and columns of the seats were different. It was very close. One, to the untrained eye, one would say it was Forbes Theater. And that same theory applies to this 9/11 event, which they were questioning Andrew about. What we were viewing with that was something that was very similar, but the whole area in question was different. The buildings were different. Part of South Ferry was different, was missing. And that was a view from Atlantic Avenue down by the piers, Atlantic Avenue and Columbia Street in Brooklyn. We would view South Manhattan. You could clearly see the towers from there. So that whole area, part of the waterfront was missing. The water itself was different, different color, and it wasn't choppy. And then South Ferry was different. And then the buildings were very similar, but different. They weren't exactly the same height. I counted all the floors. The floors weren't the same amount of floors. The building was very similar looking, but it was different. So Andrew was criticized for talking about this highly classified project. I was told never to discuss it. We didn't know what it meant or what had transpired. We didn't see planes crashing into the building, just the buildings collapsing at some point. They didn't seem to be on fire the same way. This is now after the fact. So we got tapes of the real event. So we had a very similar event on a Crown Advisor, but we didn't know what it meant. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah.
A very
it's kind of like
report what he
it's
saw.
It's kind of like... If I may, is it sort of like when you wake up from a dream where you've experienced what appears to be a parallel reality, when you come back, you're not sure if you're really awake or entirely sure what it is you saw in the first place?
Well, I'd say it's more real than that, but I'd given a very accurate, because I was placed in these particular jumps, is my ability to go there, because my photographic memory at the time, give specific details about my surrounding area, the bridge across Atlantic Avenue, they call it the BQE, and the bridge was different. I gave all the...
Well, exactly how was it different? What was different about it?
Well, the length across the street was different. The bridge was slightly narrower. The roadway was a lot cleaner, a lot flatter. The bridge, the ribs on the different I-beams were different. It's arched, that bridge, a particular way, and it sits on pedestals, each I-beam. There weren't as many I-beams. There weren't as many pedestals. So it was a similar bridge, very close, but it wasn't it. And then the view South Manhattan that I gave in the description of the building was different. So I had studied South Manhattan through pictures, as many pictures of South Manhattan taken from a helicopter or a plane, looking from Brooklyn or looking from the South Manhattan from the Lower Bay or the Upper Bay, as they call it, and then looking towards Manhattan, South Ferry, and up north. And there's a lot of views of Manhattan of that area. So it wasn't...
Well, like the iconic Manhattan buildings are like the Chrysler Building and the Twin Towers and of course the Empire State. Did they look like they were structurally different as well?
Well, I couldn't see as far as the Chrysler Building. I couldn't see that far up. I couldn't see as far as the Empire State Building. I couldn't see that far up, but I could see South Manhattan quite clearly, and then the seaport that's there, South Seaport. Parts of the Battery Tunnel were missing. And then between Manhattan, there's Governor's Island, because you have the Battery Tunnel not far away, which goes to, touches on Governor's Island, where there's a building for air recirculation, which sucks out the CO2 from the bottom and puts fresh air into the tunnel. That's about halfway between the Battery Tunnel from Brooklyn to Manhattan, or South Manhattan. We call it the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. That was missing. And a lot of other details, which, you know, I can give the South Ferry, which was actually a big
problem missing. Well, as is customary, Bernie, instead of letting you go on, we're going to cut to a break. This is like the third time this happens. It's classic. All right. Thank you, Bernie. Thank you, Andrew. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you touch that dial at AmericanFreedomRadio.com.